Welcome to Flip Your Lid with Kim Honeycutt. Kim is a psychotherapist and executive director of ICU Talks, a mental health speaking ministry. This is a podcast about how to flip your lid and learning how to reconnect to who you really are.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Flip Your Lid. I am really honored today to sit with Dr. Christine Cocciola. I first heard her on Dr. Romani, who's the leading expert in this world on narcissism, in my opinion. I got to sit here, Christine, on that podcast, and it rocked my world in a beautiful way because I know she's out there being an advocate and doing the hard work. So welcome to Flip Your Lid, Dr. Cocciola.
That was such a warm welcome. Thank you so much for that. I'm grateful to be here.
Yeah, so glad to hang out with you. So we're only guaranteed questions, the first one, and we'll just see where this goes. So tell me and tell our audience, what flipped your lid and what measures have you had to take to reconnect to your true self?
Wow. Whoa. Okay. Well, I've been doing this work since I was 19, advocating for children of abuse, sexual assault victims, and domestic abuse victims, because someone very close to me had been abused as a child. So I was determined to change the world at 19 years old, and ended up falling in love at 16 and marrying this person and being in a relationship that spanned over 35 years. Didn't realize that person was an abuser. And so teaching every single semester on the power and control wheel in my social work classes, and also a therapist helping people with some of these exact situations and totally unaware of the power and control that was being exerted onto myself and frankly, my children for a long period of time. So what flipped my lid? Geesh, a lot of things. You know, a lot of things. So, but I think, you know, maybe when you heard me speaking on Dr. Romani, one of the parts that was actually, I think, a little bit cut was this idea of understanding that a lot of victims and survivors come to these relationships not as having low self-esteem or being codependent. Everybody wants to say victims and survivors are codependent. Frankly, it's super traits. It's like being really empathetic and you know, wanting to make things work out and being fixers and agreeable and accommodating to the point only because, not because I'm initially, this is what I always say, it's not initially that people do this to get, to make the other person happy. It's because they actually are invested in the relationship.
Yes.
When I came across really understanding schema theory and subjugation, I think that's really what flipped my lid.
That's so good. I'm so appreciative of what you said for so many reasons. One, that even though I'm a survivor of a narcissistic mother, I have trained, studied, done all this stuff, that to hear someone else who is amazing and beautiful and brilliant, knowing, because I still have had clients and different people who I didn't catch on at first. And I become their victim again. And yeah, I'm supposed to be that advocate. And it really is such a beautiful place of empathy, the way you explain this and talk about the super traits and how schema therapy developed by Dr. Jeff Young came in and helped you reframe that, which helps all of us reframe it.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, Young and Clasco wrote the book, the Reinventing Your Life, the 11 Life Traps. We all have life traps. And I always have always told any of my clients, regardless if they're a victim or survivor or not, check out what your life traps are, because we all have maladaptive coping due to our family systems, due to culture, due to, you know, so many influences, the political and social context that create oppression. So we all have them. But Glasgow and Young came up with the 13 danger signals for victims, for people who have subjugation as their life trap. For me, that was a huge ding, ding, ding moment. It was huge. And I, if I had my druthers, every single clinician would use the Young Glasgow assessment on subjugation when they meet clients, because people come in with anxiety and depression, to your point, right? We meet people in our life and we think that there's something wrong with us. And really, if we were able to do an assessment and say, wait a minute, maybe the thing that is quote unquote wrong with you is that you're overly giving, that you're overly empathic, that you are so attuned to other people and you don't want them to feel pain that you actually, your boundaries are shifted, right?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of power in that. And I hope someday that that will be like when you go to the OBGYN, you do an assessment. Mm-hmm. This will be the assessment when you walk into a clinical atmosphere. So,
So just for my knowledge, so I give a lot of my clientele, my patients, the young questionnaire, the 116 questionnaire. Is there a different one that's just about subdivination or is it the same one?
Yes, there is. So he has, of course, that long one that will tell you what your life traps are, right? What your schemas, your maladaptive coping mechanisms are. I appreciate the fact that you know about this.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited.
Yes. So, but he also has in this particular book, an assessment for each of the 11 life traps. And one is subjugation. I actually did a research study on it and I actually called it Perfect Prey, which you probably know I have a podcast called Perfect Prey. Because I think it's never a victim's fault, but certainly they are the prey of these abusive people because of these traits, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And so in that research study, there were 187, I believe, victims and survivors who did the assessment and they scored moderately high or very high in subjugation.
That's profound. That is just so profound. And, you know, I love that you're putting out there that, did you do that research when you're working on your DSW? Is that when that came about? That, like, it's just what therapists, we just don't know enough and it's okay. It's the willingness to learn. And like the fact that I listen to a podcast every day, which is how I get to know you. And from that, I've been able to refer patients to you because I think you do like a 15-minute thing you and your team do for free and then a 30-minute for a very low price for those who are dealing with cohesive control, those who are going through the court system, right? And these are things that sadly you have to be an experienced therapist to come upon. And we're trying to change that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think to your point, there's some of the very most well-intentioned therapists miss the signs. Yes. I'm actually doing trainings now where I'm training therapists on coercive control. Mm-hmm. It's all about the nuances of how this abuse shows up in relationships in the systems. So, you know, the micro systems, but also in the meso systems and the macro systems.
Yeah.
And because, you know, clients come in with anxiety and we assume that that anxiety is something internal in them when actually it's an external factor that's influencing it. And, and unless we ask about relationships, and that's like kind of like a social work thing, like social workers do really like to look at people in their human environment. Unless we look at that child who's coming in, who's saying something like, I hate my mother. She's so controlling. She's so this.
Yeah.
Well, immediately we could say we could validate that child. But what about helping that child to process why they feel that way? Is it possible that child has come into your office indoctrinated to believe that about a protective parent?
Sure. That's so, very true. That's a good point.
Yeah. We really have to really be much more discerning when people present and not just take everything at face value. And I think there's a lot of wonderful validation that can happen in the clinical realm, but sometimes that validation actually reaffirms a false narrative, which is really, really harmful.
Mm-hmm. False narrative. Absolutely. So one thing that's a red flag for me is that, and it's not just women, but predominantly who walks in my door, who has these symptoms are women and they say that they're bipolar or their husband says they're bipolar or borderline personality disorder. Those are red flags to me that they are being abused and they're being convinced that it's because of them, that they're the moody one. They're the one that's imbalanced. And have you seen the same thing?
Totally. Totally. It's astounding to me. And I'm really concerned about this, number one, with adults, but I'm really concerned about the young people who are getting diagnosed with this when nobody is actually saying, let's ask about the parental subsystem.
Yeah.
What has been going on in this family system, in the parental subsystem, that has created a child who has mood swings, who is dysregulated, who has maybe attention challenges or obsessive challenges? We keep on seeing this over and over again in the literature. Neurodivergency is, of course, intensified when you're being coercively controlled. And the reality is that oftentimes no one's acknowledging the course of control.
And so is that part of, because I know you're in one thing, see here's what happens. I get obsessed. Now, whenever I see a reel or social media and someone's calling it high conflict in the divorce system, I now channel you, but I also channel my social justice anger, because I'm like, no, that's not what it is. So tell our audience why that would bother me and what you taught me about that.
Sure. So you listened to Dr. Romney's podcast. She actually, as you probably heard, highlighted me at a PESI conference in front of 500 people and said that because of hearing me say it's not high conflict. So Rosenfeld and colleagues actually did research in 2019. Mm-hmm. And what they found is these abusive personalities, these narcissists, these coercive controllers. Right. I always say not all narcissists are coercive controllers, but all coercive controllers have the pathology of narcissism. And frankly, they also are a little borderline. Their fear of abandonment is pretty significant. True. But we don't really talk about that too much, or their black and white thinking is pretty significant. But in any case, you know, this research affirmed what we already knew. There's only one person drawn towards conflict. Mm. Now, if somebody's trying to take more custody time of your children from you, and they are an abuser, you damn well are sure that they're going to be a little bit more aggressive in the courtroom because of their fear. It just makes perfect sense. So, but there is no such thing as, in my world, there's no such thing as high conflict. I want to ask the question. And so I always say, this is not rocket science.
Yeah.
This is not rocket science. Look at the parental subsystem, judges, court professionals, unless you're complicit.
Well, and here's the issue, right? They are complicit. There's too many unification therapists, even the word of that is nauseating at this point, who there is this whole behind the scenes of them and the money they're making from this and unification camps and judges who are all a part of this. And it's now being talked about, but we can't talk about this enough.
Agreed. Yeah. So I think there's, I think probably it's threefold, right? Let's call some people ignorant. Well, then get yourself educated.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Right. Let's also add in there, maybe you have a fear. You have a fear of, you know who these abusers are, and you really don't want to create adversary in your courtroom, or you don't want to create a problem in your private practice. These are the people who report therapists to licensing boards all day long. I mean, you know, it happens. So, so you have a fear, but also, are you complicit? Are you allowing this abuse to continue? And that is, like, unfortunately, that's why I'm doing this clinician training, because I feel like the best way to overcome this issue is to infiltrate the system.
That's right.
With the best trained people.
Yeah.
We have to almost like take over.
Yes. And it's also just knowing like that if you're in this situation and you're going to court against someone who is pathological, someone narcissistic, all the things that the support you're going to need, because this is exhausting. We're talking years. We're talking as a narcissistic system that you're stepping into, thinking everything. Someone's going to listen to you and hear your stories, and they aren't. They're not going to hear about this is what narcissism is, right? There's certain strategies you need, people like you who can meet with somebody, help define it, but then how do you go through it?
Right. It's so true. It's so true. And so I think I use the word, I say the three P's.
Yeah.
We have to predict their behavior. And the only way to really predict their behavior is to actually step outside of your circumstances and recognize what you've been living in.
Right.
So a lot of, as you know, victims and survivors haven't quite gotten there.
Yeah, that's true.
And we as victims, survivors, again, those super traits, we don't like to believe that people can be evil.
Right.
But there are evil people.
That's right.
And so we have to predict what their behavior is. Mm-hmm. And in that, we can prepare a lot better. But if you're not predicting, there's no way you can prepare. And then in that, you protect yourself a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, like what's the strategy behind this? What does that person know will hurt you? How can you maybe make them believe they got what they wanted? They hurt you. Mm. Make them believe it and actually... Yeah. You know, it's kind of like that discussion about 50-50 custody. No abuser deserves any time with children, period. But every court is going to suggest 50-50.
Yes.
What happens if you suggest maybe 60-40 and no child support, if you can do it?
Right.
And now they think they've won, but they have to think you're really upset about losing the child support. That's and you so probably true. Are. But they have to actually truly believe that you are devastated by that.
Right, right.
And that you're taking on the 60-40 because you know how hard they work and they need to be able to have more time to work.
Right.
Right. And so in that, if you get 10% more time with your children, you have just won gold.
That is
bottom line.
Yeah. And really for everyone listening to this, if you don't know what this is like and thinking that's dishonest, no, this is survival. And using survival strategies, because a lot of people, it's just true, a lot of judges are narcissistic. A lot of people within the system, a lot of guardian ad litem are not educated. The only thing the court system psychologically will look at is parental alienation syndrome. And guess what, y'all? That is a false diagnosis. There's no such thing. It was created by a narcissistic man who, once he got exposed, took his own life.
And who actually supported pedophiles.
Yes. So let's just, and so just know what is known about this man, and still PAS is honored in the court system, but narcissistic personality disorder is not.
Right. That's a really great way to put it. I appreciate that. Like how come we recognize one thing, but not the other, or how come we're not talking about coercive control, which is not always non-physical, but why are we not talking about the fact that people can be abused in ways that may be physical, but also the worst type of abuse? We know research shows us the most complex is when we don't have a visible sign, because it's very difficult to describe for people to believe. It's like Dr. Evan Stark states, it's like carpenter ants devouring the foundation of a home. You don't even know it's happening until it's too late.
Right.
And so really not recognizing that in the court system is so significant. And I just want to add a little thing for your listeners, because I think when people hear that people like you or me don't quote unquote believe in parental alienation syndrome, it is an immediate turnoff.
Right.
Because there are some people who are like, wait a minute, I was alienated from my children by an abuser.
Yeah.
And I want to be really clear with your listeners. I hear you. I see you. It happened to me.
Yeah.
The problem is the term is being co-opted
by
abusive people.
Right.
We really don't want to use that term, and we don't even want to give an abuser the opportunity to co-opt it in your case.
Right.
But we see you and we hear you. Yeah. And really what it is it's psychological maltreatment of children is really what it is. It is abuse and neglect. That's what maltreatment means. It's beyond it is just horrifying for children. It is the coercive control of children.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And you said it so well. And part of it too is like, you know, usually the spouse, male or female, that is the narcissist, it's just narcissist supply for your child. They really don't want to provide energy and regulation and all that for the child. If they did, they would not be fighting in court for years. They would not be coming against what the child is saying. Like, you and I both know children, they're saying at age 12, 13, 15, 16, I don't feel safe around you, and the court saying, who cares?
That's right. That's right. I know a 16-year-old right now who went to jail for 3 weeks because she refused to go with... Custody was flipped. Mother was getting 48 hours a week versus what mother had previously had. And the judge actually put her in jail. A 16-year-old.
16-year-old. Y'all hear that? 16-year-old. This is happening in so many different states. So much is happening. And you and I both know that reunification camps are huge money makers. We're talking about children, strangers coming into the house midnight, taking children from their bedroom and taking them to a camp and making them stay there until they're willing to be around their abusive parent.
Which often, I mean, we have some, right, who haven't seen their protective parent for 5 years.
Yeah.
And so if you're a person listening and you're like, yeah, but my kid has been alienated, I want them to go to camp with me. I love them very much. I miss them. Let me just say this to you. If your child has a belief system that they are attached to that other parent and they aren't attached to you, it's actually harmful to try to deprogram them. It's actually harmful. And so I get the pain of that. I want to just I see you, I hear you, I get the pain. And you're thinking this reunification or repair therapy is going to fix things. But it's not going to fix things if we're trying to deprogram our child, because that actually causes more harm.
Yeah.
It's like ripping the attachment to something, even if it's not a healthy attachment, ripping that attachment away is not how we help children to heal.
It's not. It is not. And again, you're saying it so well that so many children have been programmed that they are leaning towards the narcissist because they have watched and subconsciously and consciously decided this is what's safe. This is, I have to get the one who disapproves to approve of me for me to be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And how so horrible true. For a parent to watch that and have to wait. Have to wait.
Right. And so there's a way to do that. It's just simply about being present, being available in a way. When they come back, they have to know they're coming back, not to questions. They have to know that the conversation, if it's over coffee, 2 years later, 2 months later, whatever it is, it's benign. Yeah. It's a benign conversation that does not have expectations laden upon it. Mm-hmm. That's where they will begin to feel like they can come back more regularly. But when we when we come at them and we're like, well, where were you? How come I haven't talked to you? How come you haven't texted me? Why do you want to live with him? All of these other things, that's not going to be helpful to their healing.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, people's motives matter. So some people are asking that with really good motives. Other people are asking that with their own hidden agenda. But we're expecting children to regulate their parents' emotions instead of the parents regulating the child's emotion. And the child's the one who's going through the most change. Right. And divorce isn't easy on anyone, but the child's job is not to regulate your emotions. And sadly, unification therapy teaches the child, you got to make sure daddy or mommy is okay with this.
Oh, so well said. Yeah. So well said. Yeah, I appreciate that very much. Yeah,
it's really heartbreaking. I just want to thank you. Like, I could spend 3 hours with somebody and they would not give as much information that you just did in 25 minutes. But really, I want to thank you that you are part of my resource, my team, and so many people can come to you, spend some time with you, get some really solid advice that's got a wide lens to it, right? And when you don't have choice, you need somebody coming in helping you to have choices, and that is so the advocacy work that you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's really important that we do look at this through the wide coercive control lens. Like if we could look at all abuse every single time one person or group of people in your home, in your, you know, education, in your employment, you know, and of course in agencies and family court, in the government, in all political realms.
Yeah.
And think about what is the motivation behind people who are exerting power and control over us.
Yeah.
And is that motivation to minimize, to diminish, to put others down? I mean, when I think about coercive control, I think about racism. I think about classism. I feel like it's the basis of all of the harms inflicted onto humanity. And of course, you know, of course, we're mostly concerned about our most vulnerable.
Yeah.
But if we really widen that lens, like you just said, and looked through this coercive control lens, all of a sudden, like all the veils come down.
Yeah.
Like you see the world in an entirely different way.
Yeah. So well said.
And I think that's the way if we can all do that, there's power in that personal power, good power in that.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. And just knowing, like, there might be one three-hour class in graduate school teaches you a little bit about narcissism, borderline personality disorder. Very little is taught about attachment theory, schema therapy. As far as I know at this point, it's not taught within the graduate level classroom. So if you're looking for an advocate, if you're looking for a psychotherapist, find somebody who has taken the time to take Dr. Cocciola's class. They've done something beyond what happened to them in graduate school, because it's just like with any education, it's not enough.
It's not enough. Yeah, I actually have now about 8 therapists on my website who are licensed in various states throughout the country. And that's the hope, is to grow that list so that, I mean, if people wanted, if you're using insurance, you can certainly go that route. And myself and my associate also see people and of course trained, because we need to really shift the way that we look at virtually all relationships. I mean, you know, this is an interesting stat. One of my colleagues mentioned the other day, actually in one of the trainings I was giving, 35% of women suffer violence in their lifetime. If 35% of women suffer violence in their lifetime, how many perpetrators are there?
Yeah, it's a good question. How many?
Perpetrators.
How many? Yeah.
It's astounding, because perpetrators typically have more than one victim.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's astounding when you
It
think
is. It is. And to know that we got a system that might not have the empathy, understanding, and life experience that when you go seek help for whatever that type of violence is, then now there's another trauma. There's a secondary trauma. And a lot of times it just doesn't end until you find some people like you who are able to sit and let someone have space to learn how to heal.
Yeah. I mean, the institutional betrayal is.
Yes.
Just so the trauma is so compound and complex. It's layered. Yeah. It doesn't really, there's no room to breathe. Honestly, it feels like sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's really true. Yeah. So we got to find at least one person who gives us breathing space and sees beyond what situation we're in. So thank you for being that person for so many. We'll make sure in our notes that people can get in touch with you. They can get in touch with you for professional one-on-one, but also to be part of your class. If you're a therapist or somebody who really wants to know how to help people who, if there's anybody who needs help, it's people who are surviving a narcissist.
Thank you. Thank you. And my protective parenting program is specific to moms and protective dads who are dealing with children who are being coercively controlled, whether they're afraid to go to the abuser's home, whether they're aligning with the abuser, whether they're disassociating. The program is set up in a way that it really gives protective parents the tools to be able to help their children as they navigate all of these harms that they're experiencing. So,
yeah, I love that. And, you know, for those of you who heard Dr. Carol Doris last week on the podcast, talk about that as a child, through attachment lens, that what is considered love is protection. And so when we say protect a parent, we mean that's the loving parent. And so thank you so much. Honestly, thank you. This has been such an honor for me, and it fed me so much. So thank you for being here. I know you're super busy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate it. Y'all check out her information, follow her on Instagram, do all the things that cool people do. And I know you heard something today that helped you reconnect to who you really are. And we'll see y'all next time.
Thank you for listening to Flip Your Lid with Kim Honeycutt. Please subscribe, rate, and share. You can find Kim on Facebook or Instagram at KB Honeycutt. To get an autographed copy of Kim's book, visit ButYourMotherLovesYou.com. Remember, no matter what, treat yourself well today.